very, very hopeful that they were going to get a lot of money from the state and the public to buy a new integrated library system. So they were having a big powwow of the consortium to learn about the kinds of things that they might be looking for. So this was a much, much longer presentation that had a lot of stuff about all of the different pieces of the ILS. And I've scaled it back to just the conceptual pieces to present to you today. Now, my main prediction here is that the next generation of integrated library systems, also called, we tend to call them library management systems, but I'm talking about the same thing, ILS, LMS. To me, today it's the same thing. I'm predicting that they'll be much more modular, and putting them together will be less like erecting a monolith and more like building something with Legos. And it's standards that will help to ensure that the Legos fit together. I worked on this issue as part of the report that I recently prepared for the Library of Congress. And if you recall, some of you have read the report, that report is based on input from 23 noted library and information science professionals. And those interviewees talk at length about something called web services. I'm sure you've all heard that buzz. And the definition, and in very, very brief, is web services are technologies that allow applications to communicate across programs and programming languages. Across platforms and programming languages, using standard protocols that are based on the extensible markup language, or XML. Now, these interviews said that web services could connect catalogs and other library resources to search engines, to e-learning systems, to portals, to Amazon, and so on, with the goal of providing a more seamless and satisfying experience for information seekers. The National Standards Organizations, or NISOs, Views Initiative, which has now evolved into the NISO Web Services and Practices Working Group, began work in late fall 2005, just a few months ago, to produce and maintain best practices and interoperability documents. Now, interoperability is the heart of web services, and it's a crucial factor for designing the kinds of information systems that research libraries will be needing to operate in the much larger scholarly information universe that we see today. It goes well beyond books and serials and their electronic counterparts. So what might all this modularity and interoperability mean in practice? In effect, it would result in much more open and loosely connected but linked systems in which finding can happen in one system, identifying and selecting in another system, metadata management, such as that which is done by an e-resource management system, in another system, and getting, that is, delivery of the item, in still another system. So as the integrated library system evolves, I think libraries as a whole will want to pursue the objectives here on the left. Even if there are few systems or tools to help us fully realize those objectives today, we will need to move in the direction of these objectives rather than being able to go there in one leap. Now, the list on the right is where we are today and the kinds of methods and tools that we're using now. And this business of web services and open, loosely connected systems is for now a dream. But I invite you to dream with me for a minute or two anyway. Before we get started on dreaming tomorrow's dream, let's look at the dream that has prevailed for the last 5 years or so, and which librarians have variably called portals, gateways, silver bullets, what have you. This model that I'm about to show you illustrates a single library, one library, that provides access to a rich but overwhelming array of all kinds of databases and collections that you see here. Can everybody read those titles, or is it too dark? It's too dark. It's other libraries' catalogs, the local library catalog, digital collections, license databases, and other, for example, DBs, all kinds of repositories. So all of these have separate, different user interfaces, and library users are often pretty much on their own to be aware of what is online and what print collections are available to them, what those collections contain, and how to find and navigate their many interfaces. It's a very fragmented environment. So remember, this is the dream that we've been dreaming for about the past 5 years. This dream has been to build an integrating layer to help the library's local community find what they need quickly without having to sort through masses of materials and online data that is stored and organized in multiple places, in multiple ways, behind multiple interfaces. In recent years, many have thought that federated searching, also known as metasearch, or maybe OAI harvesting, or maybe both, will provide the integrating tools to realize this dream. The underlying assumption was that we would want to integrate everything in one big, diverse, but still local information system, whose home would be our library web pages. We at Cornell have now gained some experience with how such a system might manage and integrate the diversity of resources to which libraries provide access. And so we have learned where the warts are and where the problems are, as well as where the successes have been. So as the first decade of our new millennium advances, the local portal dream, which is this thing, that ties together locally owned, housed, digitized, or licensed resources, it's begun to unravel a bit. Information seekers who are accustomed to billions of information sources aggregated in the indexes of powerful search engines and becoming more familiar with scholarly tools like Google Scholar, which is shown here on the left, or popular tools like Meetup, which I learned about a couple of weeks ago at the NILINC annual meeting. How many of you have seen Meetup? It's a way for people to find each other in popular clubs. And I played with it a bit to make this slide, which is, and ended up finding the Ithaca Skeptics group. So these people are beginning to expect much larger aggregations of information, well beyond what can be collected and integrated into the interface or portal or gateway of a single library, even a library as big as Cornell's. So tools like Google Scholar and Meetup have kicked off a trend in which discovery happens in very large aggregations of information. As we see here in Google Scholar, we've found a book, and we've navigated to a local collection that's represented in our catalog. And here, we've gone from millions of clubs to a single club in our town. So discovery happens in very large aggregations of information that are national or even global in scope, and these eventually lead to locally based services. So to foster this trend and enable it behind the scenes in libraries, we need system modularity and interoperability and something like web services to tie all this stuff together. We also need to be exponentially more skilled at collaboration and at partnerships among and outside libraries. So here's a nebula. So I argue that over the past 5 years or so, while libraries have been pursuing the dream of the locally integrated gateway or portal, which, by the way, is still a very good dream, more and more members of the Cornell community began starting their searches not on our library web pages, but out on the open web, or on course web pages, or within repositories that are scattered around the web. So let's think about this. Step way back, and look at the nation's or the world's libraries' separate, independent attempts to integrate information resources for a local community of users. The picture that emerges, if you do that, is something like this nebula here. Library collections of all kinds, print and digital, and a wide variety of other kinds of scholarly information resources, think the archive, think big data sets, e-science, are isolated in terms of how they relate to one another, who is responsible for them, their delivery platforms, and how standards are applied. So you're looking at lots and lots of libraries in a cloud without form. Yet, with a big adjustment to our dreams, this nebula might become a factory of stars and planetary systems, yielding immensely favorable results for scholarly information seekers, and add immensely to the value that libraries provide for society. So a galvanizing comment for me while doing the research for the Library of Congress report was this one. As project manager for the Encompass project here at Cornell, then team leader of the research phase of the Integrated Framework project, I had been focused on the goal of inward integration, the local integration into the portal. That is, the integration of discovery on Cornell Library web pages. This interviewee's comment crystallized for me the insight that had been growing, that I had it at least partially backwards. Integration should be outward, in the direction of the open web. In other words, instead of assuming that users would come to our pages, we should assume that users will be searching on the open web, using mostly search engines, and our job is thus to make our data visible to them there, then pull them in to fulfill their needs through our local collections and delivery systems. And it ought to be pretty nice when they land on our pages. So in this way, my thinking has shifted to another kind of dream for a unifying system, one that leverages both the strength and the power of popular search engines with the wonderful assets that libraries and scholars have to offer. Here's a first attempt to articulate the components of this dream. I don't have a picture of it, of a unifying system, in which libraries and integrated library systems vendors play roles, but not the only roles. And I'm going to stop for a few seconds and let you read these things. Everybody had a chance to scan them? Okay. So we're seeing a lot of tinkering with the pieces of the new vision for a unifying system model. And these are some of the projects that come to my mind as harbingers of what is to come, at least in the realm of books and journals. We should not forget that there are many other realms besides books and journals that we should be paying attention to. Having said that, these particular projects that I've listed on this slide are of great interest because they involve the kinds of assets that libraries and abstracting and indexing services are generally looked after, which is books in the serial literature. And I love this little risk rascals thing. I don't know if it's true, but are there any little rascals fans in here? Yeah. Did you ever remember this, Google, that it came from them?
Actually, the reason why I thought it came from Googleplex, which was an astronomer who asked his child, how big is the universe? And they said, it's a Google. Well, what's the biggest number you could come up with? And they said it was a Google. And that's where I thought it was.
Yeah, well, Wikipedia says this, so who knows? Maybe you should put an entry into Wikipedia.
Yeah.
So for now, the new dream is just a dream. I believe that libraries can get there, but it will take time, and there'll be many, many course adjustments along the way. And there's going to be many intermediate stages. as discovery begins to happen in larger aggregations of information, with delivery more in the domain of libraries, online bookstores, and other suppliers. As an intermediate step, the OPAC interface is likely to be part of a shared catalog of some kind, with the local catalog and the ILS serving as last mile technology to carry signals from and to the shared OPAC and provide infrastructure at the neighborhood level to complete the discovery to delivery value chain. Along these lines, I think we should be looking for library ILSs that are less monolithic and more open, modular, and especially more compatible with other systems. As these trends gain momentum, and there may be more compelling reasons to share the costs of building, storing, preserving, and delivering collections, traditional, electronic, and digital, to users. Now, does this sound a little bit like Catalyst to you? At least the dream of Catalyst? I think we have a lot in common. There's some of these things about the intermediate vision that are showing up in the concept of Catalyst. So also, I believe libraries will start paying more attention to research and learning objects that are popping up all over our campus and that we are calling sometimes digital assets. Students and scholars are creating these assets, but generally libraries are not involved in supporting them. We and other libraries have DSpace repositories, and some of the faculty assets are stored there, but not that many. And as the trend toward bigger and more heterogeneous scholarly information environments takes hold, the library will have at least two strategic assets to offer. First, experience with effectively organizing and preserving information on behalf of others, metadata, in all its varieties, and the ability to engage directly with students and scholars in learning, teaching, and research, and I'm calling that outreach. If we think back to the nebula again, we have the opportunity to make special collections into a lovely set of stars and planets. The collections have been largely hidden away in the local environment, but circumstances could be such that these unique special collections will take on more importance, prestige, and weight for libraries. Should this part of the dream come true, we will need to manage or have someone manage for us multiple systems delivering a wide variety of objects from special collections, images, text, sound, and other media. Aquifer, and sponsored by the Digital Library Federation, and which we are a member, and projects like it offer the potential to draw myriad special collections, smaller ones, from the nebula into planetary systems that will serve information and seekers and scholars much better than these variety of local collections scattered around the landscape. It could be said that Aquifer is one example of the kind of outward integration that I've been talking about. So just to wrap up, I'm arguing that the next generation of ILSs will need to support the next generation of students, researchers, teachers, and scholars at our universities and colleges, and that satisfying these needs will require modular ILSs that can be put together like Legos. Standards for connectivity and linking, like reference linking and web services, will be extremely important in making these loosely coupled systems interoperate. Libraries and their information systems will find ways to not only coexist with the Googles of the world, but to take advantage of them to expose their rich collections more effectively and to a broader audience. We will need ILSs, or at least a collection of interacting modules that can integrate access to a greater variety of information objects, special collections, and other many kinds of digital assets. Integration should be outward rather than inward, with libraries seeking to use and share their collections in new ways. None of this will happen by libraries working alone. That bears repeating. None of this will happen by libraries working alone. I believe we're about to enter a new era of unprecedented collaboration and partnerships among and outside libraries. Thank you. So I think there's a time for a couple of questions while they get things arranged for Adam. Stunned. Yes.
Do you see also the idea of trying to harness information that is available widely outside of our own institutions, sort of bringing that back in through catalog searches? Because, you know, so sort of the outward and the inward integration, but thinking of things where other places have electronic versions of books available, other, you know, kind of like if you search a WorldCat, you get kind of all these other versions of things, but then stuff that's out on the free web as well, stuff that's on business websites, stuff that's sort of out in the industry reports, things like that. Do you see some of that, you know, trying to manage how we can get our users to know about that information as well and bringing that back down through the interfaces, or?
I'm seeing the future of the catalog as really reflecting more books and serials and electronic counterparts. The framework for discovery would be what's bigger. And so the catalog would be one piece of that discovery framework. And I've also talked about the catalog becoming, having more shared catalogs that reflect multiple collections. So I'm seeing the catalog in this dream as being more of a way to deliver legacy library collections, rather than trying to cram a bunch of things into a local catalog that are of a wide variety of things.
It seems to me that the focus of this is, as you said, discovery and special collections. And what the university is dying for is a system that handles course materials, which doesn't involve any discovery, doesn't involve special collections. It involves sort of course management and copyright kinds of things.
I didn't really talk about that much in this presentation, but one of the outward integration pieces is with learning management systems, learning objects, and all of those kinds of things that we really haven't paid a lot of systematic attention to on this campus. CIT is obviously supporting such a system, but we haven't been all that much involved with, and I think we're missing an opportunity there. So I think Adam is, okay. We'll have time for more, I believe.
Sorry.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that.
This is really just a shameless excuse to show you a picture of my daughter. The text there says BERMI 2, which is the Digital Library Federation Electronic Resource Management Initiative, Phase 2. So I'm going to talk briefly about that, and then I'm going to walk through what I'm calling a thought experiment, which cycles back to some of the stuff that Karen's been saying. So BERMI 2 has three main parts. One is, for those of you that haven't followed this, electronic resource management, this initiative was put together a few years ago to try to come up with a reference model for how to manage electronic resources, the license terms and workflow and the things that different libraries are doing separately, to come together and try to agree on some ways to do these things. So the first phase finished up, and now we're working on kind of picking up where we left off. And one of the things that's, now that these ERM systems have been developed or are being developed, librarians are in the process of mapping their existing licenses into their systems. And this is, it's a very complicated and difficult process, which Scott and Bill and Lisa and the rest can tell you about in detail. So we're trying to develop some professional training to help people to do this kind of thing, because that's where we're at now. So there was, we did a pilot of this in last summer at ALA, and they did a workshop partnering with ARL at NASIG, and there's one scheduled in New Orleans next month. Now the second part of this is data standards. There's a NISO editor DLF group that's working based, I think they're working primarily with this thing called Onyx for licensing terms. Peter Hurdle's involved in that work. If anybody has a question about the status of that. Peter, could you just give us a quick capsule of kind of what's going on with that?
Sure. What they've been working on is taking some of the editor standard licenses from people like Wiley and other people and mapping them over into ERMI and a little bit of XRML, and to try to come up with a standardized rights expression language that all publishers could then use for expressing their licenses, and then there would be no need to have the training workshops that you're doing, because the licenses would come in a machine-readable form.
Prospectively.
Yeah. It's a very slow process when you're dealing with people internationally. And just trying to find do a conference call that can handle the Netherlands and the West Coast is a difficult challenge.
This is the work that I'm involved in ERMI too. It's a web service, a protocol for the automated delivery of Project Counter reports of downloads for electronic journals and databases that we use. Statement of functional requirements for a reporting system and how this will fit in. Counter is right at the center of this, and we're fitting it into this existing ERM model that we have. And so, for example, the III ERM system that we have has a place, a repository, for putting reports in it in XML, if you have it in XML. But the publishers aren't really making them available in XML, because up to this point, people haven't had systems that would deal with them. So we're working on this protocol that will automatically download the reports into one of these systems. And III, Ex Libris, Endeavor, Serial Solutions are all committed to supporting the NISO SUSHI protocol in their ERM product. So on the client side, we have good support. The hard part is on the other side, on the publisher side, because not all of them see it as a value-added service, but rather just as another thing that the librarians are asking them to do. Are these PowerPoints going to be on your
page? They're going to be on the PDF.
So there's a SUSHI project page, and we did a webinar. Phil Davis and Tim Jewell and I did a webinar the other day, which was kind of strange for me. But that's on there too, if you want to see how disoriented it was that day. This is just to give you a sense for what this an XML web service does. This is a SUSHI, part of the SUSHI protocol, and we're trying to make everybody always says simple, but none of these things are really simple. But we're trying to make it small anyway, so that what the system sends to the publisher is just basically the name of the customer reference there, and who's requesting it. So it's expandable or extensible, so that some third party could collect reports from multiple libraries and act as an agent for them. And then you're asking for journal report one and a particular date range. And then what you get back is the XML report. That's all we're trying to do. Not a part of ERMI 2, but a big outstanding problem for us, for other libraries, that's that we have MARC records in the catalog, We have license and coverage information in the ERM system. We have coverage, that's holdings, linking rules in the link resolver, and then keeping all of these things together is a real challenge. So one of the things that we can do, that we sort of have control over, is try to at least use the same database, coverage database, for both the ERM system and the link resolver. And this is one of the reasons we ended up with the WebBridge link resolvers for this reason on the management side. So, okay, so here's now the thought experiment. And it's gonna be pretty tight on time, I think. Which has three premises. The first premise is widespread and growing dissatisfaction with the current OPAC paradigm. And that's kind of what Karen's been talking about. I have a couple of quotes here, which I don't think I'm gonna spend any time with. One is from the Bibliographic Services Task Force of the University of California Libraries. They did a report recently, which says, you know, the same thing, that we have all these different interfaces and it's difficult for the people that are using the systems, and that the distinctions are arbitrary. And here's a quote from Karen's report, which says, you know, the catalog is in decline and we're moving into some new paradigm. So that's premise one. Premise two is patron-initiated borrowing works. User-initiated interlibrary loan and document delivery operations provide better service than mediated ILL and document delivery services. In most cases, user-initiated services have lower unit costs, higher fill rates, and faster turnaround times than mediated services. So that's premise two, that we want this kind of thing. We want unmediated so people can just serve themselves whenever possible. I mean, and I think that's what the get it work is about. And premise three is the trend towards global aggregation of content for discovery and delivery. And that's the key point to really focus on, is the delivery, that all of these great systems that, you know, that we use, Amazon for books and CDs and electronics, and Google for full text and actually for advertising, they're an aggregator of advertising, Netflix for DVDs, iTunes, Yahoo, the music services, eBay. They all minimize the cost of the user of transitioning between the discovery and the delivery. It's always seamless and really easy. Because, you know, the Amazon one-click button, for example, I mean, that takes it to the furthest effect. Ride the long tail effect. Items find their users when content is aggregated for a large audience. And this is also echoes what Karen said, is when you have many, many people using one system, you can develop, the chances of somebody finding what they want is higher because you just have more people looking at it. So with all of that, what's the logical conclusion of what our OPAC is going to look, if we're just talking about our collection now, what's in the catalog now? To me, it looks like this. It's this, you know, it's again what Karen's kind of been saying, is that our own local catalog is just basically too small. As big as it is, it's still too small. So in this thought experiment, we're going to simplify the interface, because people like that Google interface. And we're going to build in ranking and recommending based on intentional data. That's a term that Lorcan Dempsey coined. Data which reflects choices and behaviors. It captures intentions. Examples are holding data, which are collection development choices, circulation data, download counts, database usage counts, resolution counts, things like that. So you build those into the system, just like Google does with PageRank, as a way to influence relevance. Now, in the upper left-hand corner there, I have 2010, because this is also a dream. This is some time in the future, and it's and then I have this slider bar here, which I'll talk about next. And we have branding. And by the way, this is, I did this talk at the III Director's Symposium, and my first library job in Louisiana was at this public library, and they use an innovative system. But it's also a good example. It's not just Cornell, it's small libraries. This ought to be a system that scales up and down. So this is really the part I want to talk about the most here, is that the slider bar is both a design element and a conceptual illustration. It's a way to illustrate what I'm trying to say about highlighting the delivery part of this. So imagine that you're the user, and you do your search, and you can slide this left or right. And if you slide it to the left, it gives you free and licensed electronic resources. So I've also just made a leap that it's not just books in here, that this interface is going to be searching these journals, full-text journals and so forth on the other side. If you search to the, if you move it to the right, you're going to get just what's on the shelf in your own library, because that's the stuff that you can get today and walk over and pick up. If you move it a little bit further to the right to tomorrow, those are things that you can get through an off-site storage or document delivery or so forth, and so forth. So the format, if you move it to the right from where it says now, and you've already had a result set, then you won't see the electronic resources anymore. You'll just see the books. So it's a format neutral kind of interface system that really emphasizes the delivery part. Does that make sense so far?
So you're saying that if I pick tomorrow, I would only get materials in off-site storage and document delivery? I wouldn't get things to the left of that?
Yeah, that's what would show up as a way to kind of filter or sort the results.
But maybe the free and licensed electronic resource would be best.
Well, you could just slide it back to the left. But
so
but
you always start on the left?
You might. I mean, you might. If you're looking for books, you might just start right there in the middle. But
it seems like you'd want the aggregate of what you choose plus everything to the left.
Maybe you would. But again, this is just a starting point. And I don't want to argue over kind of the interface, but just to highlight that this is a way to sort things according to when it gets delivered to you. So, but to make a system work like this, you need lots of data in it. Lots of the kind of stuff that we have in the library system now, but we don't always collect systematically. I mean, this presentation started for me with imagining what the next ERM system would look like in light of the kind of things that Karen is saying within that framework. So to make this work, you need lots of data. You need circulation status, you need license data, just because if you should only see things that you can actually get. Or if you do see it, you might see a part of it, and then you can hit document delivery or something, you know. But you need to be able to make those distinctions within the result set. Loan period, fair use law, geography, consortia, patron status, all these things are going to influence the result set. So in other words, the long-term future of ERM goes beyond electronic resources to managing the delivery rules for all of this stuff. And librarian selectors will be augmented with expert systems that analyze the borrowing patterns and optimize local user-centric collections based on what patrons request from beyond their library. But all this stuff becomes available to them. They can see it. It's just a matter of how long are you willing to wait, because that's how things work now for us. So here's just, I'm not real happy with this slide, but it does give you a sense, but this is again the St. John Baptist Parish Library. They still have the Telnet interface to the catalog. Although I was assured at the III meeting that they'll be upgrading to millennium soon. They have links to Yahoo, Google, and then they have a link to their statewide network, the Louisiana Library Network. But it's, again, it's all disjointed. So, in this thought experiment, what we have is this black box, the OCLC Global Data Storage box, and it's print electronic books, electronic journals, databases, print journals, print indexes, rarities, it's everything. Let's just assume it's everything. And what goes between the interface and all of that are these licenses that we have, or our own collection. What do we have within that global data set? What do we have access to now or tomorrow? So I'm separating out the rules, the ERM system, from the OPAC, what the user sees, and integrating it through web services, another black box. And within this, multiple parties could compete within this space, as long as these things are standards and OCLC as a trusted third party, that really is the advantage that they have, if they could kind of navigate this so that people are all buying into the same system. So that's my presentation. That's the thought experiment.
A minute, catch your breath.
We don't have much time, so.
And I'll just throw in a couple of words. Basically, I recently moderated a panel discussion at the Endeavor End User Users Group, and Adam and Karen have thrown out some really provocative ideas here, at least as viewed from a lot of libraries outside of Cornell. I mean, I see a lot of people here nodding and going, yes, that makes sense, and that's an interesting, but this is quite a lot more provocative from the viewpoint of a lot of other libraries that aren't quite as far along the timeline. And one of the things that became really clear is from both of these models that a lot of collaboration is required, a lot of work on shared standards is required, and all of it has to happen a lot faster than these things have happened in the past in the library world. So those are things that have to be worked on for any kind of a new vision to happen. And I found it very interesting that one of the things that Roland Dietz said was that from the library vendor point of view, that until libraries can come up with a shared vision, the vendors can't really move forward, because it really, from an economic point of view, does not make sense for them to design a system when we haven't decided on what we want yet. So these types of discussions and presentations that we're having, we need to go out and be missionaries, I guess, because that consensus building and discussion to build a shared new vision is going to be what's required in order to move us into this new reality. So, questions?
Adam, you quoted Karen Calhoun as saying we need to move very swiftly with changes to the catalog. So how soon till we can get rid of Voyager as our start using WorldCat with this information?
I'll defer to
I don't know the answer either, Peter, but I know that I've been involved in giving advice to the group that is working on Catalyst, and one of the experiments that they're looking into is using OCLC, the group catalog concept, and sharing a catalog with
the partners in the storage facility. And so we could take a step in that direction. Other libraries have already taken steps in that direction. Where the North Carolina State University has built a discovery layer on top of the, I guess that's a, what kind of system have they got?
Circe.
It's a Circe back end and Indeca on top, and it's really worth taking a look at that interface. Now, that is still describing a locally housed, locally circulated collection, and it doesn't address the issue of what do you do with all the A&I services and the full text and integrating that kind of discovery, but it's a very nice illustration of how we could improve the OPAC. Mm-hmm. In these travels that I've been doing this spring, I've also run into two presentations of the Aqua Browser, which is very cheap, surprisingly inexpensive. It's more of a visualization kind of front end, but it's also running on top of an existing ILS.
And this was one of the things that came up, you know, that we didn't put into the presentation, but came up in some of the panel discussions. And that is, you know, using WorldCat as an aggregation of data is one thing, but they also need to look at, you know, if we want to drive people to them as an interface, they're going to have to do something to improve their interface, which means we have to agree on what we'd like to see in that interface.
So I just wanted to say, I just got back from the OCLC Members Council meeting, and I think by the end of the summer, you know, you're talking about driving people and where people are going to be using tools. WorldCat, there's a service called WorldCat.org, and some of you know about it already, which will allow basically the entire WorldCat database, a box, a simple search box. Now, you don't have to go to you can put that box on any web page, basically. It's essentially distributing the discovery, WorldCat discovery, wherever you want to put it, and driving it back into WorldCat. So that box you were talking about, Adam, is going to be, you know, there's a lot more work to be done, but it's really quite fascinating that you'll be able to put it on course web pages, you're going to put it wherever you want, and it's going to be available, and you'll be able to search the entire WorldCat database. And OCLC, since they've switched over to the Oracle platform and software, it's like there's 1,000 flowers blooming out of there. There's all sorts of stuff, from discovery to delivery to all sorts of fulfillment that's coming that I think is going to, you know, make that vision available in quite wonderful ways, it seems.
Gene, did you want to say anything else about the Catalyst? And changing the catalog interface?
Well, I'm not scheduled to do this here, but
obviously, sorry to put you on the spot.
No, it's okay. What I wanted to see is I was really inspired by all the talks, and I've been to a couple with Karen also, since the catalog is just picking up. We got the approval from the provost 2 weeks ago, so it's a project that's going to launch. And what I've done lately is traveling with Karen to different New York functions. And I feel the Catalyst project is the other half, because Karen was saying, discover on the open web, but get it from my library. And I'm working on the get it from here, backing up with a beautiful service that once you discover, wherever with that worldcat.com box, here, Catalyst pops up and say, come to Cornell. We not only have our holdings, but also, you know, holdings from XYZ institutions. I personally have been very interested in the OCLC projects that they've been doing. I feel Cornell shares the similar vision, because they don't believe that you can yank the users from Google to come to a library, no matter how beautiful the design is. They believe you have to flow with the river. And I listened to a webcast talk by Rick Anderson. He was using the analogy of the Mississippi River to say, users prefer the route of the least resistance, whether it's discovery or delivery. So go there, flow with the river, instead of saying, okay, let's block the water. One day we will be overrun. So that's basically the philosophy behind the Catalyst, which is
really flow with the next generation of the library catalog, but back up with the fast, fabulous delivery and with multiple options. So I expect, since we now have approvals, we have two potential partners, that we are still in a very early stage to try to get agreement on. And once that, you know, becomes possible to go public, I think I will be doing a presentation to the system.
The idea of the, what can I get today, what can I get tomorrow, what can I tell her, what can I do to get something I want to come back to, is highly appealing, especially working down here in special collections where, you know, either things are at the annex or they're somehow, you know, they're in preservation, and, you know, the idea of when can people actually get items, I think is, you know, it's electronic, so you don't even have to come bother having to come all the way down the front library, you could have just signed your ticket at home and not made the trip. I think is really, really important for users. And I'm wondering how modular is sort of that idea? I mean, is that the kind of thing you could actually just sort of implement right now? Because we know things that are at the annex are going to take at least 24 hours to get to a patron, whether they're regular holdings or special holdings. So, you know, is that the kind of, is any of that information the kind of thing that actually could just go in right away? Because we already know that.
If you explore the NC State Indeca Power Catalog, they have that functionality. It's kind of buried. You have to just look around. But there's a place that a set of pages you can get to where they're doing something like that. So one would think that it's possible to implement something like that, depending on what kind of layer, discovery layer, we would decide to put up.
Maybe just having it as like an entry that always you know, just delivery time that shows up in the catalog for all results. You know, like it's here now or it's not here now. So I mean, it just I think that would just be ultimately helpful. There's any way to kind of phase in any of that kind of information, just in terms of our regular results sets that we send out to patrons. Just that idea is something that's really, I think, compelling.
Maybe that's something that Reds can look at. Marcy.
I find all of this very, very interesting and actually exciting. But the thing that worries me is that while we're building this consensus that the vendors are all expecting us to build, they're sitting still. And if it takes us a year to build consensus, which I think is very optimistic, then at the end of a year, we're no further along in bringing this vision to fruition in terms of relying on the vendors to deliver the software and the technology for us than we are right now. Because it's still going to take them 3 years to build this kind of system.
Karen, can I answer that one?
Yeah.
I guess I don't agree that they're standing still, because it depends on the company. I mean, for example, III, from what I can gather, I think that they're really focused on selling these regional catalogs. That's where their future is. VTLS is invested very heavily in the NISO standards work, because they have less to lose in this what's happening now, and more to gain in a sort of this kind of model. So, and OCLC, like Ed said, you know, they're doing all kinds of stuff there. So I think they're getting bits of this from us, the success of the North Carolina catalog and so forth. I think it's influencing the kind of development that they're doing today.
Well, and that can be true for some of those vendors, but I would disagree with you for III. I mean, I don't think that they're moving in the direction of modularity so that you can do plug and play.
No, I didn't say that, though, with III. I don't think they are either.
I mean, I think, and so in that respect, the integration is happening within the realm of one software vendor. And I'll integrate all of my similar libraries all of the libraries that are, you know, that are using my system.
Right.
And then, so we're still going to have these kind of enclaves where we won't be able to bridge these kinds of gaps.
Well, let me speak to that a little bit, because that did come up at the end user, the users group. And Roland had put forth a very interesting idea about the concept of a hybrid library, where it was more modular and that it was more able to take you to utilize web services. And you know, and I think when he was talking about having consensus, it's that you know Cornell is able to take advantage of a system that's open and build our own things that plug into these web services. But there are a lot of libraries out there that don't have that. So for library vendors, they're willing to provide some of these things, but there has to be an idea of what you know what that means or what's desired, whether it's the outward integration or whatever, and what kind of data needs to be there underneath in order to be open, to be you know exposed to these web services. And he has been working with, you know, Endeavor has been working with companies like VTLS to try and come up with a new market vision that allows for competition and still cooperation. Some vendors are further along on that than others. I mean, you know, VTLS and Endeavor and Talus in England have been working much more closely on trying to come up with this kind of market vision. But some vendors like III are less willing to play. So again, you know, you have to allow the market forces to shake out at a certain point. But again, it helps if we know what it is that we want. You know, if we're going to adopt this outward integration vision, then if you know we accept that as the premise, then we can move forward with defining some of these functionalities and saying the ERM needs to be expanded to do X, Y, and Z. One of the reasons that the ERM products took off in such a hurry was because you guys had done all that work and you had listed out all the tasks, all the functions that needed to be done. And so it was easy to develop the software. So maybe now we need to take another look at the ERM, list out all the additional tasks that need to be put into that. If we do that, the vendors will build it. Peter.
I'm surprised by the emphasis upon vendors, because we've seen with things like Sakai that it makes a lot more, if you want to develop a course management system in big universities, it makes a lot more sense for those universities to get together and develop it as together as an open source project than it does to rely upon commercial services like WebCT. So wouldn't it make more sense to have a group of large universities get together and develop the inventory management systems that can link to OCLC through web services, rather than rely upon vendors that to do that for you?
I think that works in terms of development. I don't think it works in terms of support for when small libraries want to adopt that. I mean, you know, you can probably speak to software development and supporting, you know, things that we develop. Certainly, it works in a development model. It doesn't always work in a support model.
That's a scenario that could happen, though. One of the university library directors that I interviewed was thinking very seriously about building their own.
Yes. That's essentially what I was getting at. That I think that looking at some local solutions that you could work on with partners would, in many respects, get us much faster toward an end product. And I think we have to start kind of encouraging as much as possible, I use that term advisedly, the vendors that are out there to start looking at open source and making their products open source, or at least exposing their interfaces so that you can get to those things in a reasonable way, and that so that you could build your own if it turns out to be cheaper. I mean, this is always a problem. It's a question of make or buy. And if the imperative is so great that you need to get there fast, then in some respects a smaller organization can get there faster than a big one. And I really think that the open source projects that are out there the most successful ones, Apache, for example, I mean, the support is incredible. The most recent issue, as a matter of fact, of Information Week had a very interesting article on open source, and that the vendors, the commercial software companies, are not embracing open source, and that they're being left in the dust.
It's a great discussion, but unfortunately we have now run out of time, and I can see the next group of people hovering back there.
If you'd like to leave comments from today's presenters, the evaluation forms are at the edge of the table over here. Thank you.